Accession number 30062, reel 12.
And two of them came back on board with broken, you know, think great wallops on the head and so on. And then the following morning the police appeared and arrested two of them, and we had to leave them behind. And then we went off to do this last bit, and then about 4 or 5 days before when it was all boiling up to be the end of the war, I was ordered to go with one of the crew to Malta, fly down there to attend the trial by grand jury for these two and offer character references.
Can you remember their names?
Pardon?
Can you remember their names?
Oh yes, but we never discussed that.
We don't. Okay, no. It's very gentlemanly.
Well, yeah, and in fact, we didn't believe either of them were culpable. They might have been involved, but I don't think there was really anything in it. I think, but they were accused of inciting a riot, inciting a concourse of more than two persons to create a riot, which was, and in fact the only damage to the policeman had been a button torn off, whereas our two sailors had both been walloped over the head with truncheons and so on. Anyway, one of them we managed to get off by saying he had shaved off his beard, and so the evidence of identity could not be proved. And the other one was found guilty and was sentenced to 3 months hard labour. And then came the end of the war. So he in fact got an amnesty after about a month of it, but he was a chastened individual. But meanwhile, I was flown back, and we were flying back from Malta up the Strait of Messina, and I was busy enjoying the scenery and looking at Augusta as we went past it. It was quite low, when suddenly the pilot passed back a message: hostilities completely completed, unconditional surrender, 1100 hours on whatever day it was in May, whatever it was, 45 of course. And do you know, the Air Force didn't, that was my first flight ever,
really?
The one came down there in an old Dakota, yes, very uncomfortable. I remember I took out a little picture of the Pope, because I'd attended, I haven't told you the story of my leave in Rome, have
no,
I?
No, you haven't. Well,
because of what happened then, which I'll describe later,
yeah.
I had a little picture of the Pope that he had been given out in St. Peter's when there was a serviceman's audience, a whole church. St. Peter's was full of ex-service, and he was born on whatever they call it, along the centre of us all, when he was blessing us all, you see. And we were all given this little... And I wrote on the back of it, Strait of Messina, you know, 1100 hours, the war is over, and tucked it away in my pocket. But the whole of the RAF was grounded when we got back as far as Bizerta. Yeah, I think so. Or somewhere in the south. No, it was Naples, somewhere near Naples. I couldn't get back to the boat. And they'd had the end of the war, and I hadn't been there to celebrate it, you see. But I got back, 2 days later. They did it because the RAF pilots would have all been blown out of their minds. And so perhaps it was just as well, because I was able to get safely back to Ancona. But I heard all the story from my first lieutenant and the acting captain for the, and the 2 nights before the end of the war, there'd been a sudden message from the base saying 658 and something else, get out of harbour quickly. So there's a flotilla of E boats come down wearing white flags. And 658 was the boat that got out without me knocking one of my propellers against the harbour wall in their haste. But they got out there and approached the leading boat, the E boat, and there was a full captain in the German Navy who was the senior officer of the 7th E boat flotilla that I'd already now know about. And he explained in English, he was to these people, that he'd brought down as many of the German people that he could, of the crews and the base staff, and he wanted to surrender them and leave them at Ancona, and then go back and collect with his boats to collect as many as he could to keep them away from the partisans. And of course the senior officer of the base of the whole port of Ancona, flag officer in charge, Ancona, wouldn't permit it, so they had to surrender there. And therefore 658 at least could be considered to have taken the surrender of a flotilla of E-boats to mark the end of the war.
I'm very sorry you missed it.
I missed it. Anyway, so that was that. How are you doing?
Well, we've got about 5 minutes. Oh, probably about 5 minutes, but I've got another card, so I can just pop another card in.
Well, I'm very quick now. Meanwhile, after that, we still had some jobs to do. I arrived back, got the whole story from everyone, and celebrated with them late. And then we were told to go up to Trieste. And we acted for a little while at the head of the Adriatic, acting as a lamp. In other words, we hitched up to a buoy in the swept channel going into Trieste, so that any of our ships coming up and going into Trieste could see the way. So I was a glorified lamp.
Less glamorous.
And then I was asked to join, or told to join, a flotilla of fleet minesweepers, which are almost as big as destroyers, they're big ships. And for 3 or 4 days, we went along with them while they were minesweeping. And hundreds of mines they swept. And if they were floating mines and they came to the surface, because they were hidden underneath the surface, if they were cut, their lives were cut, they had to be sunk, otherwise they would be a danger. And our idea was to sink all these mines. And they said, well, you'll do it with rifles, won't you? But to do it, you have to hit one of the horns. So it's extremely difficult. I said, well, I don't know about that. We'll use our Oerlikons and our Vickers machine guns. And we sank an enormous number of these that blew up, and so on. And at the end of our time with the flotilla, the captain sent us his grateful thanks for our services and enormous expense to the Admiralty. But they wanted to say goodbye to the flotilla. And the officers all went down aboard their wardroom, and their party was done up like a gambling den. They all wore baseball caps, you know, and there were guns on the tables. It was all fun, really. And they were serving baby's bottom as the drink of the night.
What did that involve?
Rum and milk.
Ah. Ew.
Didn't matter about the it was booze. And this was the end of our war, really. And we knew we were going home to Malta afterwards. And well, it was incredible because I decided the end of my war, I was going to enjoy it. And you know, I'd never been drunk in my life because I wasn't a big drinker at all, and I couldn't drink beer because I got indigestion very badly. So I used to drink wine, which I still do, and sherry. But anyway, I got so blotto that I couldn't remember anything about the morning. And we had to leave at 7 o'clock. And fortunately, my first lieutenant remained less than he could understand, and this was my old friend who'd been my first lieutenant for a long time. And they somehow got me on board 658, and they put me to bed, and they sailed for Malta. And I came round at about midday the next day, and then began to enjoy life again. But it's a terrible story, isn't
It's a wonderful story.
it? When we got back to Malta, it was all fun and games, really. No, nothing to do. Paying off a bit. Yes, we had to get rid of all the stores and everything else. And it came to some date in the middle of September. Let's get to the end.
Oh, I think I might need to just change cards. It's just getting a bit too tight, actually, if you don't mind. Len Reynolds, Reel 8. Sorry,
Well,
so you've
we'd
got
really
support.
at the very end of the story, because we're back in Malta, having the war having ended, and we were just waiting around really for the boat to be decommissioned and for them to make arrangements to get home. And that happened by, I think it was mid-September, and to when everything else was finished, all the formalities, the paying off ceremony, you wear a huge long pennant, which is a little, any sort of shape like that is a pennant. When you commission, you have a pennant, a commissioning pennant. But when you decommission, you have a very long one, as long as you can possibly make it. And there's a sailmaker in the base could make you a long. It's a St. George's cross with the ensign in the corner. When we hoisted it and did the ceremony and hauled down the flags, 658, well, the pennant number was S658. We hauled it down, and everybody saluted and all the rest of it. And I was the only member of her original crew who was left. All the other ratings had been changed over, gone to prison, etc., etc. So it was a very emotional thing. And then, almost immediately, we were allowed to go home on what was known as Holy Medlock. No, it was known as Medlock. It was a means of transporting thousands and thousands of servicemen home from the Med to UK. And they had troop ships which collected up groups of men and took them along to Toulon. And they disembarked at Toulon, and then went to the railway station where there was a disembarking park with terrible conditions, a bell tank with, same for officers, everybody else. I remember that there were iron bedsteads without a mattress on them, so it was imprinted on my body forever. And then we were put aboard a French train in Toulon, and this was 2 months after the end of the war, and the French railways were in a terrible state. It took us about 5 days to get right up to Dieppe, or Dieppe to Newhaven. And we got to Dieppe and then across to Newhaven, and then up to the train to home. And it was incredible. The feeling was so different. The sailors were the best off, because in the train they slung hammocks. Any of them who'd managed to keep their old hammocks, good old Jack, he'll always get the best out of it. I think that's the end of the story.
I have a few questions, of course.
Yes, go
ahead. But I was just wondering how you said goodbye to 658.
Well, me personally, the most marvellous thing is that there was great opportunity in that little post-war bit to have things made, and the carpenters, the chippies, were making dozens of sea chests, beautifully made, and you could take home all your good, or have it sent home, all the stuff, and you could also have put in any, we called them rabbits, they were souvenirs, presents, everything else, you see.
Why were they rabbits?
I don't know, it's a name in the Navy for things you have made for you. Usually you had to only got them if you supplied a tot. But there we are. But the most wonderful thing for my future was I found in Corney's desk, I found that I'd taken over as the CO. He'd got a suitcase or something with every action report from the whole flotilla for the whole of the commission. And that was the basis of writing 658, and the reason why I was invited by the Imperial War Museum to write the three books of the trilogy.
Because you had this incredible record.
Yes, and I wrote it first as a huge, very rapidly written in longhand. Started when I was having a cartilage operation after a rugby injury in hospital, about 2 or 3 years after the war. But really, it was to make a full record of the story of 658 and the flotilla. For all the other people who took part, all my friends and the Canadians, because otherwise they wouldn't have the wherewithal to do it. It would just be memory. And that was a marvellous thing to do. Wynne typed it every word on an Olivetti typewriter that weighed the earth. She asked me how many copies I wanted made of it, and I said, can you do 5? And that was before Tippex, even before word processors. It just meant we used Tippex, I suppose. There were little bits of paper,
yeah,
you stuck in, and
I remember
carbon papers and all.
I just about remember.
And so it was and I then helped the quite famous author, naval author, called Dudley Pope. Have you ever seen that? Well, Dudley Pope became a friend of mine because he was commissioned by a publisher, by Kimber's actually, a publisher, to write a history of Mediterranean coastal forces. And he came to me and he said, I gather you've written the story. And so I thought very hard and I decided, well, Derek came to see me one day and we decided that between us that it was the only way to make sure the Canadians had their part recorded faithfully. So we handed it over, and he was marvellous, Dudley Pope, because in fact, when he wrote the draft of the book and sent me a copy of the draft, he'd got 6,000 of my words almost verbatim. And so when it was published, a great occasion, I said to him, he said to me, would you like me to show your manuscript to my publisher? I said, well, I'd never thought of that. It's only meant to be for this sort of population. But he said, well, I think it's worth, there's a book there, you see. And I saw Kimber, and he said, well, it isn't a book, it's a log. Do you think you can write a book? And I said, well, I'd like to have a go. And he said, well, if you can do me 20,000 words by Christmas, I'll tell you whether I'll give you a contract. The only snag was that I was doing finals with my degree at the same time.
And you managed it.
I had to, didn't I? And I sent these 20,000 words, and he said, very good, I need it by the next, I need it in time for the next Christmas. That was 55. He said, can you get the whole draft to me by October or something? And so I did, and somehow I used to lock myself away from the two children in one of the rooms and pretend to be studying. And some people, my old mentor, the geography master at school, with whom I was now working, thought I was mad. And then I took finals, the book was published, more or less all at the same time. Well, 55 the book was published, 56 I did finals, and this was a Birkbeck. Did I tell you?
I wanted to ask about that, because you talked about, I think you mentioned last time, that the degree was actually part of coming out, that it was paid for, wasn't it? You had a choice.
Yes, that's right. I told you that, and they said you can do 5 years, and
Could you go just recap that?
Yes, the Further Education and Training Board, when I was demobbed at the start of 47, said to me, you can get a grant from us for anything you want to do, but it will take you 5 years to be able to teach. And I said, I can't do that because I've got a wife and a child. I didn't have the second child then, but so all right, they said you've got other choices. You can do a 1 year training course, one of which was at Chalfont or one of the St Peter, I think, or Giles, I'm not sure, whichever it was. There was a good one there, but I said, I don't want to do a 1 year, it's not doing it properly. Well, you can do a 2 year full teaching certificate at Goldsmiths, and part of the London University. I said, that'll do for me. So I did 2 years between 47 and 49, and I got a first in a teacher's certificate, which enabled me to teach in any school. Funny that that's enough today to teach. And then I went to a primary school first. The Surrey, they sent up to the college the the most difficult interview I ever had was to get on Surrey's first appointment list. Much more difficult than any I had later. And anyway, I got there and I joined a primary school because that was all there was available. But after one term, my old headmaster steamrolled me back to my old grammar school.
What was the name of the school again?
Wallington County Grammar School.
That was it.
Yeah. For boys. There was also one for girls too. So I went back there, but I realised immediately I couldn't teach in a grammar school without getting a degree for the long-term thinking. And I discovered that I could get a degree at Birkbeck. Did I say this before?
No, I don't think so.
No, but this was working at school, teaching all day, and then going up to London to Birkbeck College, which was in Gower Street, or Mallet Street actually, yes, near the university, and then getting intermediate first, and I managed at the end of intermediate to get the Ravenscroft exhibition, which paid for all my fees,
tuition fees
for the rest of the degree. That they said I ought to get a science degree because that would be 4 years rather than an arts degree. So I decided I would, mainly because I wanted to take maths and pure and applied. That was an inter. Yeah, I did. Maths, pure and applied, and geography. And I set out to do this, and that's when I got the intermediate with a Ravenscroft scholarship, and even went as a little present. I was the delegate to the British Association of Science in Sheffield. And then I started out for 4 years, and I was by then taking geography and geology, with, of all things, anthropology for a year to get an honours degree. And 4 years hard labour, 4 nights a week, and teaching all day, arriving home and when making me dinner at 10 o'clock. I had to have some stamina. Going to sleep. When I arrived at college, it was so funny. We were a marvellous gang of old ex-service people and girls who were civil servants and wanted to get an honours degree. And we became a terrific unit, all keen as mustard, and needing really to do this, you know, and no girls to chase after because nearly all of we were married. It was a marvellous way of concentrating the mind and just being terribly disciplined. And when it came to finals, which were against all the same students from Imperial College, University College, all the rest of them, LSE, the full range of London colleges we were up against, and I managed to get a first. In fact, Birkbeck got 4 firsts.
Wow.
And that, of course, changed my life, because having got that and having what's known as a good war, terrible thinking, isn't it? Afterwards, and almost immediately, I left my old school and went to be head of geography in a wonderful grammar school down in Ramsgate. Lived in Broadstairs with 2 young children. It was lovely.